Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard. Glad to be here. Glad it's Friday. And hope you had a good week, ready for the weekend. And, well, it doesn't matter if you did or didn't, it's here. So, but I hope it was good for you. And you're ready for this weekend, as a matter of fact, in more ways than one, because it's going to be cold. It's going to be snowy. If you were especially in the central Indiana, I don't even know where this band of winter weather that's coming through here this weekend. But fortunately, there's good news. The good news is it's going to at least hold off until it appears after the celebration for Indiana's national champion football team. So that's good to see. The snow's not really supposed to come in until later on Saturday and then into Sunday. So for those of you thinking of going, there you go. Some good news. So hopefully we'll make it a little bit better. But either way, it's going to be a cold and snowy weekend at the end of the deal. So it is what it is. But hope you guys are ready. But I can tell you one thing, Fernando's ready. He is making the tour right now. I was right before coming on. I didn't stay up last night to watch him on Tonight's Show. But he's a natural, man. If you didn't see it, go back, watch it. He broke more records last night. I'll leave it at that. He also declared for the draft. He's also on the Today Show. I believe that was today. I didn't watch that either. I will at a different time. But he is, man, this dude is going to have more endorsement deals. It's going to be nuts. But Fernando has declared for the draft. D'Angelo Ponce declares for the draft. I think I saw that Mel Kiper's got D'Lo as the fifth corner off the board. So that's pretty good news, because cornerbacks are usually a target in the draft. So looks like he'll probably go, but we'll wait to hear about more. Alec Lasley will join us today. We'll find out more about who might be going, who might be staying. And there is also in addition to that celebration that Indiana football has planned, they've got a big recruiting deal built around that, with a lot of guys coming in. So that's big for them as well. But yeah, and Scott Dolson gets to take a huge bow, you know, for this. Without question, whomever all helped find Kurt Cignetti. I mean, really digging through the stuff and how they approached it. Approached it in a different way, obviously, a way that allowed them to not make an irrational hire to do something that outside of the box, and it worked in the most amazing manner possible. in the most difficult sport possible, where it was listed as impossible. But it's obviously it's not. And boy, was it fun to watch. And now we get to hope that you get to watch it again, right? But that's what all that recruiting process part is about. Maintaining status quo, but actually getting better. Now, the one thing I was thinking of is the more the level of talent goes up, you're probably going to see bigger profile guys leave at some point too. So, and I don't mean like at the end of their careers. I mean in and out. So, there's going to be continued changing with this that fans get to or are going to have to adjust to, but it's mostly going to be in a positive way. So there's that. Robert says he loves listening to the weather casters as far as snow predictions. Seems we could get anywhere from 6 inches to 6 feet, depending on which model they want to use. Well, yeah, I haven't heard anything varying that far, but weather, you know, that's why I stick to sports, man. I guess it's not much different predicting people making predictions that don't come true, right? But yeah, I haven't seen anything looking that wide, but it's coming. It's and also I think I saw this is the anniversary of the blizzard of 78. Yeah. Whoo, that'll take you back, won't it? Yes, it will, man. School. Getting out of school. And that was back when you didn't have to make that up or hardly at all. So, but that's not the case now, especially now that you have online learning. Kind of takes the fun out of it a little bit, but not necessarily so much. Looking forward to Alec Lasley joining us on the program today. Zach Osterman as well. Alec from thehoosier.com will get you caught up on some of what's going on this weekend. As far as recruiting Indiana, a lot of big names coming in. And, oh, wow, 8 to 13 inches for the Evansville area. Well, that's a wide range. But yeah, I mean, I understand that because, for one thing, this from what I understand, this particular storm is a moving – it's a moving target. So – yeah, it and how it moves as far as north and south is the impact changes from an atmospheric perspective. And that's about as deep as I'm going on weather. I think I've got all the provisions I need, at least if I don't. I'll go back out today, but... man, it was not much fun yesterday. I don't think it's going to get much better out there. So if you don't have it, oh, you better get it now. Don't wait. Don't wait. Monday might be a little rough, but if it looks like they'll have all day Sunday to deal with it as far as the crews and whatnot, and they're out there preparing. So make sure you're preparing. Plan ahead, man. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, plan ahead, of course. Don't get stuck someplace. Make sure you got gas in your tank, blanket, all that good stuff. I am going to try to just not go out, with the exception of probably need to go to the celebration on Saturday. Chris, I appreciate you, man. Yes, I am planning on it. Chris asking if I'm going to be at the celebration. So, yeah. Do I think that IU basketball makes a postseason berth? NIT question mark. Well, if it is, it would be the NIT, but I have to look at their, will they be able to maintain a winning record? Because you still have to have that to get into the NIT. It will not be the NCAA. I'm quite certain about that, unfortunately. But Andrew says he's woke up and yep, they're still national champions. He's not dreaming. That's right. Fernando, like I said earlier, was on the Tonight Show, the Today Show, making the rounds. And, yeah, boy, this dude is going to make a mint in endorsements and endorsement deals. He is going to be just a marketer's dream. He already is. Now, out in, buddy, I appreciate you very much. Out in Vegas, you may get lost into that, which it may be good, especially the first year. It's a lot of attention. So, and that's if he goes to Las Vegas, of course, but expected to be the first overall pick in the draft. How about that? It will be Indiana's first number one pick. Be their first round pick in quite some time as well. Rick Bozich on Twitter said, can't confirm if you are headed to the grocery, grab a cart in the parking lot. Widespread panic. He's not lying, man, because I was at the store yesterday briefly and there were no stinking carts. Nor parking spots hardly. And that was yesterday. Let's see. Russell's talking about number one seeds. I missed the first one who he thought would get a number one seed, so I don't know what that was. Maybe talking about Nebraska. Yeah, Nebraska is the story, basketball story. How could they not be? Man, shocking people. Well, I mean, it's not the story that Indiana football was, but it's reminiscent. But Fred Hoiberg's been building that for a while, at least. I mean, what's he been there now? 7 years? If not, yeah, at least 6, 7. I mean, so, you know, he's been able to build that or have the time to build that out in kind of anonymity. But they've had it Indiana's number for several years. That's hard to imagine. But it was Northwestern, it was Purdue, and it's been somebody left and right, unfortunately, but that'll change at some point. And you'll be glad when it does. What were the most important things you got at the store when you went, if you went? We'll talk about all that and more. Alec Lasley is going to join us first on the program today. Appreciate you being with us. We're back with more right after these friendly messages from your favorite sponsor. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday, a frigid Friday, as heading into this weekend. Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com joins us now, and lots to talk about when it comes to Indiana football. I mean, well, you can talk about the championship still, because that's going to last for quite some time. So much to talk about there, the impact. But what we're seeing right now is the impact, because this weekend, besides the celebration, lots of recruiting around that, Alec, and it's huge. This might be the biggest recruiting weekend in Indiana football history. And without giving away all the good secrets that people can find out at thehoosier.com, is that aptly described, that this could be the biggest recruiting weekend ever?
I mean, there's been a lot of firsts this year in terms of recruiting. This is not going to be the largest overall number. That happened twice this year, with a few different games, started with Illinois, and then transitioned a little bit later on in the season as well. But this will be one of the top in terms of 4- and 5-star talent. So you're getting a lot more bang for your buck this weekend. Obviously, they want to bring in a lot of these high profile names for a championship celebration. But Montrezl Sales, obviously the headliner with that, the Lawrence North a five-star wide receiver. Indiana continues to stay right in the thick of it with him, but he's by far the headlining name. There's going to be about 11, 12 players in total as of right now. There could be some late additions, but pretty heavily weighted on the 2027 class here. They're starting to get a little bit momentum in the 27 class. If you think back to the Saturday after their Peach Bowl win, when they had three commits in the same day there at the All-American Bowl on national TV. So they started to gain some momentum there. Jameson Purcell, obviously the kind of the headliner at the moment, just in terms of how long he's been committed, the four-star quarterback there for Indiana here in the 2027 class. So Montrezl Sales headlines this weekend, close to a dozen guys on campus, and there's a good possibility that Moore could be joining from a commitment standpoint here in the following week or a couple of weeks. They have a lot of guys who they are extremely high on, and vice versa, that are extremely high on Indiana. They could potentially turn into some commitments here shortly after. So it's an important weekend, obviously a big weekend when it comes to that, and still in the thick of it with looking to kind of finalize a few transfer portal additions to kind of wrap up that class as well. So, Kurt Cignetti talked about it, but he took, maybe one day off there to go down and get his Bear Bryant Award. But outside of that, the Tuesday, Wednesday leading up to that, well, it was all about, talking with underclassmen, trying to get confirmation and further confirmation on who is going to be staying versus who's going to be going. There's obviously a couple major decisions there, notably, right, with Carter Smith and Omar Cooper being the two now that D'Angelo Pons announced yesterday that he would be entering, and Fernando Mendoza. Obviously, we knew that was going to happen, but officially announced this morning. But those are the big two that can really change not only the landscape of the Big Ten, but the landscape of the entire country and what's expected next year with potentially Carter Smith and or Omar Cooper potentially returning to Bloomington.
Yeah, that would be huge because we know what Indiana's got coming back and we know what they've got coming in. You know what they have from a quarterback standpoint. One question at quarterback would be backup. What are they going to do there? I know that there had been talk about potentially bringing in yet another transfer quarterback, but we don't know the where Tyler Cherry is, if he's going to be a part of that. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so obviously, I think it was no surprise, at least for you and me, and I would assume based off of how much it was talked about, the transfer of Alberto Mendoza. It never seemed like he was, despite everything that he had said, that he was going to be coming back. You moved to Josh Hoover. I think the biggest news that kind of flew under the radar over the last week and a half to 2 weeks was the news that it appears Grant Wilson could be getting a medical redshirt year for one of his previous years. So he was the third string quarterback this year, transferred in last off season. So a guy who's played a lot of football, played at Fordham and Old Dominion, but a guy who's a veteran in the locker room could potentially be getting an extra year. By the sounds of it, Kurt Cignetti fully expects that he'll get an extra year and be back in that quarterback room. So that's a big one from a veteran standpoint, a guy who's played a lot of snaps, who's now been with the program for a year here at Indiana for, being able to learn in this system under, Kurt Cignetti and what the quarterback room is fully entailing. So that's probably where you look right now as the second string quarterback. I don't envision Tyler Cherry getting a lot of playing time. I think that he's still probably a year away from actually being able to fully compete as that backup. You miss nearly a full year, especially that stage of your career and kind of the early developmental stage from the college standpoint, that sets you back in a big way. So he's probably going to be using a lot of this year just to get caught up to returning to the field. And then I would expect next year him to really take that step as potentially the backup there. But obviously, full steam ahead with Josh Hoover. I would be surprised if they bring someone else in, with the assumption now that Grant Wilson is coming back. The assumption leading up to about a week ago was that he would be leaving. And so that's why you would kind of look at potentially two quarterbacks coming in. I don't think that's a scenario anymore. Still could change. But I don't believe that. I think offensive line, tight end, linebacker, probably the top three positions that they're looking to just kind of finalize, and then potentially the running back room. Obviously they've passed on a couple of guys just based off of a few different aspects. Most notably, Mekhi Frazier, the Michigan State transfer, who was all set to go to Indiana, but just was not a firm fit there from the coaching staff's perspective. So they moved on from him. So you're looking at still a phenomenal running back room, but they may look to bring potentially one extra piece in there. But I think you look at offensive line, linebacker, tight end is the three groups that they're still looking to kind of finalize moving into spring practice.
Yeah, and then we could see after next season yet a fourth straight transfer quarterback come into Indiana, because, you know, unless Grant Wilson is ready to start, and without having, I guess he would have some starting.
Well, this upcoming year, I guess next year, 2026, would be his final year of eligibility. So he would be gone regardless. It'd be a clean slate from that perspective. So either way, you're looking at almost an entirely new quarterback room from that standpoint of things, with right the assumption that Tyler Cherry would, in my opinion, move up to potentially that backup role after having now 2 years in the offense, learning the system, and then this year being obviously the year that he's able to actually get back on the field, potentially get some live ball snaps in games. But yeah, I mean, look, this is, again, we have a long way to go to see what Josh Hoover will do. We know what he has done, but I think the full expectation is he comes in, and whether or not he's a Heisman finalist, right? That's a long ways to go. But I think the expectation is he comes in and puts together a phenomenal season and gets his team, right back into the college football playoff yet again with the talent that will be around him offensively.
Yeah, with the fact that if Grant Wilson does indeed end up being the backup, while Indiana was able to make it through this season without an injury to the quarterback, we saw what happened a couple of years ago when season before last, when Curtis Rourke went down and he had to be replaced for a while. And so that would be a huge deal with where this team is now and at the level that they're playing.
No, absolutely. And look, that's why I think you feel comfortable. And Kurt Cignetti and Fernando Mendoza, even Alberto Mendoza, talked very, very highly of Grant Wilson from the standpoint of, again, just a true veteran who, knows the game of football, has played a long time, multiple different stops, so brings a lot of experience that way. Obviously, Indiana was blessed this year to not have any sort of injury. Outside of, I think you look at probably the big hit in the Big Ten championship game, the first snap, as being kind of the one true scary moment there for Fernando. But outside of that, right, you didn't really have any injury scares from the quarterback standpoint. But yeah, you look the year before, obviously Taven Jackson had to come in, play some extended drives, extended games with the injuries to Curtis Rourke. So the backup quarterback position, is one of the most undervalued positions, especially in college. Once you get to the pros, there's a little bit more weight put onto that. But I think in college, right, a good backup can do wonders for you. And we saw that 2 years ago with Taven Jackson. I think we saw that again this year, albeit Alberto didn't really get to show it in any sort of notable moments. And once again, they're going in with the expectation that, Josh Hoover is going to be healthy. He's been healthy for the majority of his career. And if something were to happen, right, you have a veteran who knows the system and has played a lot of snaps.
Yeah, and so they just amazing this season, each year now that they get to go into a season, what they will go into it with as far as experience, the team that they bring back next year, the experience these guys have, the belief that they will already have in what they can do, what they can accomplish. It all builds and continues to build while you have to work to maintain it and to grow it. There's a natural growth, an organic growth to it as well.
No, absolutely. And look, you still have, albeit, you know, a large contingent of, you know, the success of the first 2 years are now gone, or expected to be gone, right? You still have the potential to have a good chunk of the core back for another year, especially, right, if you take into account potentially what could happen with Carter Smith and Omar Cooper. I think probably more notably, Carter Smith, if he decides to return, not to take anything away, obviously, from Omar Cooper, because he's a phenomenal player and did tremendous things for this team. And I think was, you know, undervalued nationally for the majority of the past two seasons of what he was able to bring, just because of all the other weapons that Indiana's had. But I think you look at that wide receiver room and you feel very good specifically with what you have returning and obviously Charlie Becker. A lot of people, you know, forget about Tyler Morris, who was expected to play and start at the slot receiver position this year before he tore his ACL in spring camp. So he'll be back to provide some depth, the Michigan transfer. Obviously, you have some good young pieces in Davion Chandler, LeBron Bond. But then you look at, obviously, the two big fish that they went out and got, Nick Marsh and Chaz Preston, two guys who are going to, you know, come in and bring a lot of valuable snaps from this past year as number one wideouts and look to be in a obviously very, very wide receiver, healthy and wide receiver experienced room there with those two additions. So I think you look at Carter Smith as being the kind of the key core decision there, especially being the offensive line that has some questions, regardless of if he comes back or not going into next year, some depth that still needs to be added. And obviously some star power. You lose a tremendous leader in Pat Coogan. So you're going to have someone step up. And I think that would be a perfect role there for Carter Smith. So we'll just see what he decides to do. But defensively, you bring back a lot of key pieces as well. So it's a team that, you know, still has a lot of that same chemistry, still a lot of that same, you know, true experience with Kurt Cignetti. And have still been some of those leftovers, obviously, from potentially that first year that really kind of set the standard and the expectation, specifically defensively, right? When you look at Isaiah Jones and Elijah Hardy taking over kind of that key leadership role from Aiden Fisher. So, you know, they're going to be really, really good once again. I think there's just probably a few more questions around some of those key spots that we didn't have going into this season from a returning standpoint that are obviously going to revolve around Carter Smith and Omar Cooper there.
Yeah, and I think another thing that was shown that defensively, speed over size and speed and scheme over size won. Because that's what Indiana was built on this year. They, you know, so much was made out of how much bigger Miami was in Indiana, especially at that area. And yet it did not, that's not, Indiana gave up that first touchdown. They were in perfect position. He just got around the corner and was gone, man. It was just a great play at the right time. They're going to be in that same similar situation next year. And like you just said, with this kind of rotating these linebackers that are already in place. And then a lot of these, DBs that they're rotating in, they're going to lose some big pieces and Pons and more, and others, but they have done a good job of rotating these underclassmen in.
No, absolutely. Look, and I think the biggest key to the defensive scheme with Brian Haynes is versatility. I mean, you go back to his JMU teams, you go back to the first year last year in 2024 with what they brought over from JMU. Obviously, I think a lot of people were curious how they were going to replace Jalen Walker at the linebacker position, obviously a freak athlete who could play in coverage, attack the quarterback, play at the second level there. And they didn't really have that sort of athlete this year, but they had way more versatility. And I think that's the expectation going into next year as well, the versatility that they'll have at both the kind of the front seven. I think you know kind of what the secondary is going to be, not from a name perspective, but from an overall scheme and system perspective. Obviously, Amari Farrell is locked in to come back. That's a massive win from that standpoint. And then you look at potentially Jamari Sharp coming back as well, right? But you add some key pieces, AJ Harris, what was a five-star recruit, has played a lot of football coming from Penn State, originally with Georgia, to kind of not so much replace, right, what D'Angelo Pons can do, because that's going to be more of a group effort this year. That's difficult to replicate, but he's a good, really good starting point from that standpoint. A guy who's played in the Big Ten before, started a lot of games, comes from the SEC originally as well. So you have some good pieces that can fit in there. I think the key piece, right, the key couple pieces that are going to be hard to replicate just from an initial standpoint. And again, I'm coming off of just saying it was hard to kind of, replicate what Jalen Walker was doing, and they still found a way to do it with a few other aspects. But, Devin Boykin's going to be a huge loss, what he brought to this team, which a lot of people, probably didn't expect coming into the year, the way that he stepped up kind of middle portion of the year throughout the remainder of the season. And then obviously, what are they going to have on the edge? They get a couple of the Kansas State transfers, which are really key pieces. But, you look at what they lose in Kellen Wyatt and Stephen Daly, right? Two huge, huge aspects to what this defense was at different points in the year. And then Mikel Kamara. I think that's, the edge is going to be a question mark going into next year, as well, I think, kind of that, kind of that potential like rover position of a guy who can play both at the line of scrimmage and both then in the secondary. I think those are the two key pieces and the two critical parts of a Brian Haynes defense that they're going to need to replace going into 2026.
Yeah, and then I saw some peeps in the chat line talking about, Indiana opens next season with North Texas, and Taven Jackson has transferred to North Texas. So the irony, it almost comes full circle with the closing out of the next year will be the last year of the Tom Allen cycle, I think, of players on the team, I believe. And
we'll get a little bit more, because I thought Charlie Becker initially committed to this staff.
He is.
You'll get a couple guys who will probably still stay.
Yeah. Okay.
The core pieces, right, are going to be gone on the Carter Smith, the Isaiah Jones, right?
Those, but it's just the irony that and to have Taven come in and to open this season next year against the reigning national champions. Ironic, as a team that he left. I saw you posted the stuff about Fernando on the Tonight Show, whatever. He was, man, he's going to be a marketer's dream. He's like stepped into that like it was, he had done it 1,000 times. Most people would be shaking in their boots, stepping onto the Tonight Show stage. But it's just like the next thing for him to do.
Yeah, between that, the Today Show this morning, I think he's on, the CBS morning show as well later today, or maybe in the next hour here. So he's making his rounds. He's obviously, had a very, very busy last week. What he brought to, not just obviously this community, right, in the Bloomington town, the Bloomington fan base, the Indiana program, is going to go down obviously in history for more than just, the national championship and more than the Heisman winning trophy, right? It's what he did for, the fan base to bring them together, and obviously what he does off the field, both him and Alberto, right? I think, Alberto kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit just because, he wasn't the star quarterback, but without Alberto, there's no Fernando at Indiana. And so, a lot of people obviously need to remember that and what he did for this program too. So it's going to be fun to see both Fernando and Alberto, at the next level in terms of, potential number one draft pick for Fernando. And then obviously Alberto at Georgia Tech, seeing what he can do as a starter. And I think, no matter what happens, right, this fan base is going to love both of them for forever, that entire family. For forever, but yeah, it's fun to see just everything come full circle for them from a national championship perspective, being in Miami with their family, playing their final games in Bloomington there, to now obviously going off to the next steps in their careers.
No doubt. Hey, we've got welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday, getting you ready for the weekend. And that just means, whew, get the snow shovel out, get the jackets out, all that. You got your snow shovel ready, Alec Glasley?
I mean, I have no choice to have it ready, but we'll hunker in and see how much we end up getting.
Yeah, well, it's not supposed to come in till late Saturday and then into Sunday, really. So, and then, which is good news for people wanting to hang out and go to the celebration for the football team that is happening tomorrow. And I've talked about it a lot. I don't know this, but I am assuming the reason why they're going forward with this weekend is because it's timing. This is probably the only time now you're going to have to be able to have these football players together again. Maybe I don't want to say ever, but for quite some time, because they are all going in different directions. There will be several of them that are still here, but many of them that are going on to the NFL Combine, drafted, not drafted, graduating, elsewhere, but many different directions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I think you look at the Senior Bowl, right? A lot of Indiana players are playing in the Senior Bowl. As well, practice starts next week on Monday, right? So a lot of guys are going to be getting obviously ready for that. So it is really kind of the only time that you can have everyone together before, you know, guys start preparing for the NFL draft, preparing for these all-star events. And then you have obviously the newcomers that are already on campus and eventually here moving into spring practice. So, you know, Kurt Cignetti talked about it. I think it was the day after during that the morning after press conference, where he said he's going to be really focused for the next week or two. Then he's taking a week off, going to some Caribbean island for a week, and then he'll be back full steam ahead. So they really don't have that's the, you know, there's obviously no negative playing into the end of January, because that means that you're either winning the national championship or you're runners up there. But that's the one, if you were to say there's one quote unquote bad thing, right? That's one bad thing, that there really is no off season. And you turn around for a lot of these guys, you get a couple weeks off and then you're right back into spring practice in about a little over a month. So not a lot of time to kind of, kick your feet up and relax for a lot of these players. Cause now you're trying to get back into the groove of things with, like a Charlie Becker, probably going to be starting to get practice in with Josh Hoover. And so there's just not a lot of off time for a lot of these guys.
Yeah. And no, there's not. And, Kurt Cignetti, I asked him that question that he gave that great answer to. And at first it's like, yeah, dude, you can't take some time to enjoy this. No, they really can't. That is just the honest to gosh answer, because, man, you got to keep, you got to make hay when the sun shines, and you got to shovel snow when it snows. And not great analogies there, but New Life asking about Hosea Wheeler, any chance of getting him back out of the portal? Of course, there's a chance, but what do you think that likelihood is?
Yeah, I mean, probably not. His regular rotation piece, right, for this team, but his playing time over the last, I would say, third of the season really decreased. Potentially may not have any eligibility. He is going for that extra JUCO year from his first year. So he potentially may have 1 year, but potentially may not have any eligibility left. He has a court date, I think, on February 10th, if I'm not mistaken, to have that final ruling. Very similar to the Lewis Moore court appeal back at the beginning of the season, and a lot of these other guys who have played JUCO or have had extra years that they're trying to get back or going back and either suing the NCAA or trying to fight to regain 1 year of eligibility. We'll see what happens. He probably will get that year, but I think he goes elsewhere. I think the Indiana defensive line is going to be fine. They brought in numerous different pieces from the defensive tackle and defensive end perspective. And then still keep some guys as well. Obviously, we'll see what happens with Tyree Tucker if he decides to come back. But if so, Wheeler would be, you know, already kind of third or fourth on the depth chart there. So it just appears it, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him if he's looking to make one big splash in his final year.
Yeah, this is where you think about these teams that are becoming, you know, new teams every year, and that's essentially what you have. You have lots of leftover pieces, but you got guys that are staying, guys that are going, and that's the aspect that I think most of us don't like about the sport, but at the same time, it's the key aspect that's making it great, because if you have well, Indiana's a perfect example. A year ago, the biggest deficit they had was on the offensive line. Well, they got the pieces to replace that and fill that in, along with a few others, of course. But that's what allowed this special year to happen. So anybody that wants to complain about it, I'm like, okay, well, you don't get that without this. So it's I guess it's how you look at it.
No, absolutely. I mean, even you go to college basketball too, right? And I think you look at all the guys who stay, you know, an extra year instead of going to the NBA. You know, there's a lot of negatives involved, right? With everything, I think the lack of clarity and consistency is the biggest issue for a lot of people. But outside of that, I mean, I think you look at the game and the skill level for both college football and college basketball, in my opinion, has never been higher and never been better. So if you love the sport, why would you not like, you know, that aspect of it? You know, fans are not the ones dealing with the negotiations and everything like that. So as long as, you know, coaches are content, I don't think anyone's happy with the way things are set up, but as long as coaches are content with it, you know, it's going to be fine. There's going to continue to be changes. NCAA still is going to come in and have to make some sort of new regulations around the calendar, just because too many coaches are talking about that now and in a negative way. And so there's going to have to be some changes for it. I think specifically around, you know, what the season looks like. Now the teams are playing, you know, 16 games. If they make it to the national championship game and their conference championship, that's 16 games, which goes now basically, like we said, till the end of January. I think there's a, you know, much easier way to lengthen the week and a half to almost 2 weeks of time between games. And you know, the reason why we don't have these on just back-to-back-to-back weekends, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Obviously, we talked about Indiana having 25 days off from the Big Ten championship until their first game of the college football playoff. There's no reason to have 25 days off. Makes no sense. So I think they're going to look at ways to obviously shorten that time frame, even for teams that have a first round bye, and try to get this wrapped up, you know, a lot earlier in the January calendar than moving back. Because I don't know if you've looked at the game schedule for the next couple of years, but next year the national championship game is actually this upcoming Monday. So we still would not have had the national championship game. There's an extra week in between. So you're pushing everything back an additional week. And so I think that's where there's no reason to have all this off time. They don't even do that in the NFL. And so I think it just makes no sense. And I think that's the one thing that needs to be changed that will then impact the way the recruiting calendar set up, the transfer portal, national signing day, and everything like that. But it needs to start with when the season starts and ends, and then you can fill in the gaps in between there.
Yeah, and the point of this off time, there isn't a point. It's only to get to when these bowl games were scheduled, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the thing. But you can also adjust that, right? Because it was 3 weeks ago, I think, was the last Saturday that college football played on. So every other game was either a Thursday, Friday, or a Monday. There's no point to continue to stretch all of this out, the, you know, extra days and the extra, they gave the teams a week and a half. There's no point to give them a week and a half between games. You can easily adjust all.
Well,
that
I know this is all about these bowl games that are wanting to maintain their traditions on these specific days, you know, Rose Bowl wanting to be on January 1st and et cetera. And that stuff's going to have to change as well. I mean, the Rose Bowl is, these bowl games conference championships. They're probably going to go away. We don't know what's going to happen with the CFP. The Big Ten and the SEC are nowhere close to agreeing. I'll be honest with you. And I generally always seem like I support the Big Ten for in like-mindedness. But on this particular issue, I'm not getting what the hell is the point. Nobody wants 24 teams.
I think they're just trying to flex their muscles because they – Let's be honest, and anyone who disagrees is totally out of their mind that college football runs through the SEC. There's no point of saying that anymore because the last three national championship teams have come through from the Big Ten. You now look at what they have with Ohio State, Indiana as two teams that are now going to be, I think, arguably, top five teams moving forward that can win it all every single year. You throw in Oregon, obviously what they're going to have coming back, and Dante Moore. The top of the Big Ten is light years in front of the top of the SEC. And I think you compare the SEC in football to what the Big Ten is in basketball, because outside of Alabama and Georgia and their run, they have not done anything in postseason bowl games. Outside of those two programs, there has been nothing that has happened from the SEC. They continue to lose regular bowl games. They continue to lose in the college football playoff. And you look at, Texas, who was supposed to be, the team to beat this year, obviously struggled right out of the gates. I think a lot of people are going to come in picking them next year. Who knows what happens, but Ole Miss is now losing a lot of basically their entire coaching staff, obviously going to LSU. They were the last SEC team standing there. So there's just the SEC needs to come to the realization that the college football world runs through the Big Ten. From a top-heavy perspective, the SEC is clearly, in my opinion, probably a little bit deeper just in terms of good teams, because the bottom half of the Big Ten is very, very bad, in my opinion. But you look at top-heavy teams, and at the end of the day, all that matters is if you're winning bowl games and winning national championships and winning postseason events, and the Big Ten is clearly the conference that continues to do that year after year, and the SEC continues to struggle year after year in that aspect of it. So I think it's just the Big Ten trying to say, hey, look, we control college football. We're going to try to do anything we can to get what we want. I don't think they want a 2014 playoff. That would be it. That would be.
But are we getting any? But since then why not? Let's put it at a place where we can actually get to and get to something and get something accomplished. Because now nothing's getting accomplished.
Yeah, but nothing ever gets accomplished. Everyone just talks, and rarely anything gets accomplished. I think the one thing that you have to look at right away is the schedule and adjust that. But I would be extremely upset and sad if they move the playoff from 12 teams to 16 or whatever they would decide to do. There's no point in bringing in more teams. You need to. I would like
there are not 12 teams capable. I don't think there are 12 teams capable of winning the national championship now.
The argument is
Miami.
Exactly.
Yes. But part of that is, I still don't think that there were 10 teams capable. I think that there were teams in between that were not. Alabama was not capable of winning a national championship. Obviously, those teams that just weren't as good. Texas Tech, I'm sorry, they did not have an offense worthy of that. They were not good. They did not have a chance to win a national title. And so there are generally only so many teams that are truly capable of winning a national championship. Now, the thing is, they don't always truly know which those teams are. That's the difference. They're living on these old expectations still, and that's the part of the SEC that rears its head. Why they got five teams in? I think Iowa was better than two or three of those teams that got in. But that's a debate that will rage on as long as it is what it is. What's up next for you at thehoosier.com?
Yeah, just really quick, the two big changes I want them to make are the scheduling. This doesn't need to go again until the end of January, and then allow quarterfinal games to be played on home campuses. Why not give the number one overall seed at least one game to play on their home campus to kind of, be able to celebrate their season? So those are two changes. Obviously, we have a lot of stuff still rolling out, a lot of final pieces from the national championship game, looking at potential additions to the transfer portal. Obviously, a lot of recruiting this weekend and moving into to the next couple of weeks. And then obviously, you know, still some stuff about basketball. IU plays, at Rutgers tonight. Purdue on Tuesday, two massive, massive opportunities for them. They need to win both games. I think both two are must wins if they want to make the NCAA tournament. So obviously still coverage about the team playing inside that used to carry all the weight around here from the viewing perspective.
Appreciate you, Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com. We've got lots more coming up right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. Glad to be along and glad to be here with you. Looking forward to getting through this weekend as it's looking to get a little chilly and probably snowy as well. Zach Osterman, the IU Insider for the Indy Star, joining us now. And big weekend for Indiana football, Zach, to the celebration and all that's planned right now. And it looks like the weather's going to, I don't know if cooperate is the right word, but the stuff's not coming in until later Saturday into Sunday, hopefully. And that will allow that to take place. And because it's also a huge recruiting weekend, as I talked about earlier a lot, and what this means. But it's also the last time this team will probably be together as one unit because of just everybody going in so many different directions.
Yeah, sorry, I had a coughing fit right before I came on. swallowed wrong. No, I mean, listen, it is important, and the reason why this has to happen, you know, in relatively short order is because a lot of these guys are going to disperse. You've got some guys that have entered the portal. You've got, obviously, a number of players who will want to pivot to draft preparation now. You know, just about anybody who's going into the draft is probably going to be moving to a warm weather city somewhere, you know, Dallas, excuse me, Miami, Orlando, LA, and spending a lot more time, you know, just working on kind of preparing for the combine, preparing for draft workouts and things like that. And so, yeah, you kind of have to do it now, because, you know, I mean, some of those guys are probably already gone. And certainly if you wait until, you know, kind of a more opportune season, a lot of those guys will have moved on. And so, no, I mean, that is why they are kind of moving at the pace they are with this. You know, there is an extent to which I think some schools probably would have done it already, but of course it's been very cold. Excuse me, I dropped something. It's been very cold here the last few days. And you also kind of, you do want to create a time where people have time to plan, you know, where people have time to say, you know, they don't have to take off work. Their kids don't have to be pulled out of school. Of course, you know, to your point, that might open you up to some weather concerns, but I mean, listen, you're trying to have a celebration outdoors in January in Indiana. There's only so much you can do. But Indiana is, as you said, you know, needs to kind of get moving on this relatively quickly, because a lot of these guys just aren't going to be here that much longer.
I think part of this too is it's kind of with some purpose, Zach, because if this indeed happens outside, the fact of being able to get a group of people to celebrate Indiana football outside in mid-January with the potential of a winter storm coming is even more of a remarkable achievement. They could possibly have more than they've had at some games prior to Kurt Cignetti arriving.
Well, I mean, I think they are. I mean, I would be shocked if this isn't, you know, I would be shocked if this isn't, you know, pretty well attended. And yes, you're right. I mean, you've got the weather. It does seem like it's not really going to get bad until later in the afternoon. So anybody who's got to come in from out of town or maybe needs a little bit more time, it seems like, and I don't want to sit here and say this is a guarantee because I don't want anybody to call me in the middle of a snowstorm and say that I'm the reason that they, you know, they got stuck, but it does seem like it's going to cooperate a little bit more sort of fully in terms of maybe, you know, especially because it's a pretty abbreviated ceremony, which you can understand, it's outside in January. You're not going to be out there for hours on end. That, you know, I mean, back in the 1800s, U.S. presidents died because they did stuff like that. I had to do a report in fifth grade on a president who, if memory serves, came down with a fever that killed him because he was outside in.
Wait a minute, wasn't it William Henry Harrison?
Well, mine was Zachary Taylor, but I think he was
Zachary Taylor. Yeah, from Louisville. He was,
I think, they both, I think, had similar issues basically, where they stayed outside in the cold. Anyway, we don't need to get into that. you know, the point is, it does seem, at least for the moment, like the weather's going to hold up enough for us to kind of get this done, and for us to, everyone attend this ceremony and then kind of get where you need to go so that you're not stuck in the snow. But you know, I guess in the same breath, please be careful. But yeah, I would be surprised if this is not, you know, considerably well attended. I mean, I don't think you're going to get just a few thousand people there, I guess is what I'm saying.
And how amazing, I mean, is that to you? I mean, I know it is to me because I can think back when the weather was just as peachy as could be. It couldn't have been any more perfect, but there was not, you know, a couple thousand people there to see a football game, especially once halftime went by. And to see what we're probably going to see on Saturday is yet the culmination of this crazy, crazy season.
Yeah, I mean, I think culmination is the right word. It is, you know, it is kind of the last moment. Like, it is the last, you know, big celebration. And I remember, I think about this a lot at times of year like this. I guess it would have been 5 years ago now or so, I interviewed Jim Cruz for a 40-year sort of anniversary look back at the 81 team. And I asked him some throwaway question near the end of the conversation about what it felt like to be back in Bloomington and the celebration and, you know, how exciting were the pep rallies and the parades and whatever else they did to honor that team. And he said all that stuff, we did all that stuff. He said it was great. But the truth is that there is still an extent to which seasons just sort of end. And particularly the good ones are kind of hard to reckon with in that way. You know, a bad season, a season where everything's going wrong, you can't wait to get out of there. You know, like I don't know if you've ever read Steve Alford's book, but he talks about, you know, I think it was the 84-85 season where, like, when the season was over, like, everyone couldn't wait to just clear out their locker and get away from each other because it had been such a difficult year and they were all.
That was the season on the brink.
Season on the brink was the next year. 84-85 was the year.
Oh, it was.
84-85 was the year that Knight, I think, benched all his starters, save Uwe Blab, at a game at Illinois, and they made it. They only got to the NIT, and they played to the final, and I think they lost to UCLA. But anyway, I think it was the 84-85 season Alford was referencing there. It might have been 85-86, but I'm pretty sure it was 84-85. The point is, the good seasons are the ones that you don't want to end, and you don't really realize they're ending because they become so important to you that they just consume your every, like, waking moment. Like, you know, all the idle time you have in your life, all you spend thinking about is, you know, how do we, you know, what do we need to do to win the next practice, to win the next game, to whatever. And he said, then there comes a day where, like, yeah, there's all the celebrations and it's all great. But, like, then one day the locker room's just empty. And the season is over and there are no more games to prepare for. And even if you win it all and you feel that satisfaction and that, you know, sort of that relief or that joy, there is still just kind of this, like, emptiness, you know, that is hard to fill at first because you did this thing just commanded so much, like, emotional energy in your life and mental energy in your life. And I think that, you know, what I think something like Saturday does is it allows everyone a natural sort of end point to sort of say, you know, we this was an incredible journey that we all went on together. And now that it's over, here is our opportunity to sort of celebrate with one another. And then, you know, that page has to turn. Again, a lot of those guys, I mean, I'll be honest with you, some of those guys are probably already gone. Some of those guys are probably already in Florida or LA or wherever. And, you know, we know that some of the portal guys are already gone. It's not going to be the full team. And I'm not saying that in a way that's like, oh, it's going to be sad or it's going to be less than. It's just a reminder that, like, this thing doesn't stop, you know, and you know, there's going to be a celebration on Saturday. But on Monday morning, Kurt Cignetti's concern is the 2026 season. You know, it's like that scene in the movie Friday Night Lights where Billy Bob Thornton has taken all the names off the wall because of all the kids that graduated. And so it is, you know, it's kind of, in a lot of ways, it is a last opportunity to really celebrate this team and this season, frankly.
And it really, it is going to be hard for the fans too, because as you pointed out, it's, man, you don't want that to end, because it has just been so fun week in, week out. This team has taken their fans on this journey really over the last two seasons. And it doesn't really have to end itself, but this season does have to come to an end. And what this team accomplished doesn't come to an end, but it comes to an end point of where you have to say, okay, like you said, it's time. Kurt Cignetti's worried about next season. It's time to look forward to that next season. You can enjoy the memories, but the world keeps turning.
No, it does. I mean, like, you know, yes, it's, I mean, Kurt Cignetti even said in the Champions press conference, he basically said, you know, by the time I get back to Bloomington, because he had to go to, I think, Houston for the Bear Bryant Award on Wednesday, he said, by the time I get back to Bloomington, a lot of my attention will already be turned to next season, you know, and it was kind of amusing in a way to be in the facility in the stuff we did with the media in the buildup to the championship game, because I don't know if you noticed, but like there were guys walking around that you realized were transfers, you know, that had come in. Like I saw the punter from Hawaii. I think I saw at least one other player. You know, while the 2025 team was playing for the 2026 national title, there was already a 2026 Indiana team in Bloomington getting ready for next season.
That's amazing.
You know, that is how much, and you know, we can have a separate conversation about calendar and whether it's really supposed to, you know, whether it's really supposed to work that way. But, you know, it is just kind of one of those where, from Kurt Cignetti's perspective, you know, the beat goes on, and you have to have that attitude of what's next. What do I, you know, how do I take this forward? Where does this go next? Essentially, what do I need? You know, what did he say? Like some film projects that will be good for me and next year's team. So, you know, Cignetti will be at the celebration on Saturday, obviously, but you know, the stuff he's working on right now probably has very little to do with the 2025 season. That's just part of the nature of the job.
Yeah. Information now coming out, Zach, that the college football playoff is expected to remain at 12 teams next season. And I don't know, that's not really a shock, because I was talking earlier, the SEC and the Big Ten are just on polar opposites right now, opposite ends. And, you know, talking to Alec, he thinks it's just more about the Big Ten just flexing at the moment because they can. But I'm like, well, we're not going to get anywhere. But like he said, I'm not how much change was really going to come. So looks like there's not going to be any change for the following season, at least not in regards to that, which I'm okay with, because I don't think any teams were left out that should have been in, other than, you know, the group of five thing. Do they eventually, that I think needs to be adjusted to rankings, but regardless, it's looks like it's going to remain at 12.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit of the Big Ten flexing. Honestly, I think the thing that you said there at the beginning, I think is probably more true, which is that the SEC and the Big Ten, which for a while were really in lockstep on a lot of this stuff, you know, it was when the SEC and the Big Ten kind of came in and all but threatened to leave, that everyone else said, fine, you two can have ultimate veto power. And it seemed for a long time like they were in lockstep on certain ideas around expanding the playoff. And I think there was some pushback, particularly in the SEC, against the idea of automatic qualifiers. I think the coaches in particular wanted more at-large berths, the idea being that the coaches wanted a world where, you know, the SEC wasn't restricted to just four or five teams, that, you know, that they wanted kind of a large pool of at-large berths because they believed that, you know, that would make it easier for them to get in. But no, I mean, it at this point, the real sort of loggerheads issues, the SEC and the Big Ten just aren't seeing eye to eye. Now, I do think, you know, my perception is that there's still a much better relationship there than there was in Kevin Warren's tenure, that, like, you know, Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey still tend to speak fairly regularly. The Big Ten has been clear and it hasn't wavered, though. Like, that's what's not changed. Like, it's, you know, again, you use the word flexed, and that's probably true to a certain extent. And I was going to write something on this later today, because the sort of widely held expectation was that this was going to be the outcome, was that the playoff was going to stay at 12. Some of it is probably Tony Petitti feeling like he's got the high ground right now, in no small part because of Indiana's championship run. Some of it, frankly, I think from the Big Ten office is a little bit of, hey, you want all these at-large berths. You know, you want, because what the Big Ten wants is to go to a 20 or even a 24 team model that has a lot of automatic qualifiers, where most of the field is decided on AQs, and there'll be more for the Big Ten and the SEC, and then a few, you know, fewer for the ACC and the Big 12, and then fewer again for the Group of 12, with maybe a handful of at-larges at the back end of the field. The Big Ten, I think, you know, my perception anyway was that the Big Ten might have been willing to compromise on like 16 now, with basically no expansion on AQs, with a promise that that would be an on-ramp to, in 3 years or 4 years or whatever, going to 20 or to 24. It doesn't seem like the Big Ten got that guarantee. And so, you know, I think Tony Petitti's digging his heels in. And I think part of it, frankly, you know, having talked to some people in Miami in the build-up to and then around the game itself on Monday, was that this feeling that the SEC wants to keep all of these at-large bids, and yet at the same time the SEC spends every season boasting about how much it beats up on itself, and about how the true test of depth of the SEC is just how much these teams just smack each other around. And I think the prevailing attitude from the Big Ten might be, you've never done that for 9 games. You've only ever done it for 8. Next year, you're going to do it for 9. So let's make you play a 9-game schedule once or twice, see how many playoff teams you turn out then, and see if your attitude toward AQs changes. Now, I think that is probably the Big Ten's, like, sort of fundamental, not negotiating position, but more like the fundamental rock the Big Ten is standing on. I think it has the footing to do that because of Indiana's championship. And I think that's the, when it's not just Michigan and Ohio State, but when it's a team from the middle that pulls up and wins a national title in dominant fashion, then the Big Ten can say, whoa, we don't need to compromise. You know, we hold the high ground. You're the ones fighting up the hill. And I mean, I would be shocked if the playoff isn't expanded again at some point. I don't know that I love that. I think 12 is more than enough. But from the Big Ten's perspective, if you're Tony Petitti, and I recognize how craven this sounds, but if you're Tony Petitti, your responsibility is not to the sanctity of college football. It is to the Big Ten's members and partners. And that includes Fox, it includes NBC, it includes CBS, it includes all 18 schools. And I, through that lens, I understand why Petitti is behaving the way he is here.
And ESPN is going to have the rights to all of this to through what 2031, 32, it looks like. So that's not going to change. And I think that that is something that they're going to, I don't know how they do that, because the reason it's put out for bid is to get the most buck for it. But at the same time, I there's no doubt that ESPN having rights to the ACC, SEC, and Big 12, and especially they really pushed certain agendas, it would appear, but that's open for discussion, buddy. What's up next for you, man? Just heading out Saturday, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not totally done here, right? I mean, there's still some portal questions, I think, to answer. There's still some, you know, I think there are still some you know, some moments when we're going to have to maybe change some conventions in terms of like how we frame next season, because we don't know exactly who's going to be in what spots. Still a couple NFL decisions left. I think primarily Omar Cooper. Talked to him yesterday afternoon over at Academy Sports, and he was signing autographs with Kalon Black, and he said that that decision will probably come very soon. So the point is, there's a lot of sort of moving pieces that need fit into place, but a lot of that stuff is much more sort of, I don't know what the word would be, much more sort of, you know, ephemeral than the big thing that's been staring us in the face for the last 4 months. So I think we'll all kind of get a chance to maybe back off just a little bit here and, you know, take a breath and maybe get a little rest. Who knows?
Sounds good, my buddy. Zach Osman from the Indy Star. Appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy it. Stay warm, and we'll see you probably tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always, Jim.
Thank you, sir. We've got more coming up. Coach Griff will join us next here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Stay tuned. We're back with that and much more right after these messages.
The staff and the commitment we've received from President Witten, Scott Dolson. I would like to say our NIL is nowhere near what people think it is. So you can throw that out. And this team really overcame a lot on the road in a lot of tight games and found a way to get it done. And we're 16-0, and we're 27-2 since Indiana, but we're 16-0. National champions at Indiana University, which I know a lot of people thought was never possible. It probably is one of the greatest sports stories of all time.
I don't think probably is in doubt there. It is, without question. That was Coach Kurt Cignetti just after winning the national championship for Indiana University, as you heard him point out that they were 16-0, in case anyone had forgotten. I don't think they did. Coach Griff joining me now, and man, Indiana's got a lot to look at, a lot to do now. They've got a lot to deal with now, whether it's roster, whether it's helping guys. There's not a lot for them to do as far as helping them get to the NFL now at this point. But there's going to be combine stuff for the players. They're off and training just 1,000 different things, 1,000 different directions going on. Some of the guys that we've seen declare here, obviously D'Angelo Pons declared and Fernando Mendoza has declared for the draft, expected to be the number one overall pick. But D'Angelo Pons also, I saw Mel Kiper's got him like number 5 DB on the board. That's pretty good in the NFL draft. So he's obviously going to be probably a first round pick. I mean, I would expect, I haven't looked at any mock drafts or anything like that, but if you're listed as the 5th DB off the board, they love their DBs in the NFL, baby.
Yeah, and I think with Mel Kiper and some of the others putting D'Angelo where he's at, kind of answers the question about what they think about his size as well. You know, there was a question mark about his height, you know, and comparing to some of the NFL receivers that, you know, he would go up against, but I think he's put that pretty much to bed with the way he's played for 2 years at the, you know, Big Ten level and the national level. And You know, they're coveted in the NFL. He's a guy that can cover, and he's got pretty good ball instincts and football instincts. And I think that pays dividends over anything else that you could look at. So definitely D'Angelo is going to be a high pick, I think, you know, and you already said that, you know, with a Fernando and where he's going to figure into this equation. I don't think Las Vegas would have come to the national championship game with their contingent just to be there, because they were all there to look at, to get a feel for Fernando. It's going to be interesting to see who else declares. You know, they've got these kids can now get a kind of like a draft report of where maybe they are standing in the eyes of all the teams as it pertains to draft or where they may fit in the draft. I think that'll be important for like Cooper and even Carter Smith in that respect. I think it'd be great that if Carter Smith would come back for one more year, because I think Bobstead is one of those guys that just creates NFL linemen the more he gets to work with them. And you've seen that over the last couple of years, how good some of these guys have become just because of his ability to work with these kids and improve them immensely from where they were at to where they're at now.
Yeah, it obviously depends on where they are expected to go. Mm-hmm. If you're expected to be a first or even second, maybe even third round pick, mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to pass that up as an offensive lineman. And we'll see what I don't know what where he's mocked at right now, or if he probably won't be going through the combine, right? If you're going through the combine, you're committed at that point, I assume, right?
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, I would say they'll have their draft, whatever that draft report is, usually pretty quick turnaround so they can make those decisions. I think I saw somewhere like you just referenced, like if you're considered to be in the first three rounds, it's pretty likely you go in to the draft. If you're picked to be a fourth rounder or later from the draft report in today's game, it almost is best for you to go back and play another year, because A, you're probably going to make more money by staying in the college game than being a fourth or fifth round pick in the NFL. So that's kind of what these guys are looking at right now. But there's no question that guys like Cooper and Smith and even Surratt, they've improved their draft stock by the year that they had this year. The plays that they made throughout the season, just improved their draft stock a lot compared to where they probably were at listed at the early part of the season.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how many players off of this team, this Indiana national championship team, make it to the NFL, because that is also a nice flag to wave for the future. It's a nice, well, just seeing, we're talking about Tom Brady and the Raiders contingent, seeing those guys come watch an Indiana quarterback, mm-hmm. for the guys that are looking, that's a recruiting tool right there in and of itself. And all the things that went on that during that championship run, especially leading up and during the championship itself, the attention Indiana received, the attention the Indiana players received, I cannot overstate the selling point that is. I mean, wow, that's why all of these top rated recruits are coming to Bloomington this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's right. And I think it's already paid some dividends with some guys that either, like you just said, have made a decision to come to the visit now, or even those that have already made a commitment in the 2027 class because of Indiana's success and because of the what we call the brand awareness aspect of things. Now that they won the national championship, it is a huge, huge benefit in the recruiting arena for them to tout talk about. You know, you got a quarterback now that's a Heisman Trophy winner, a guy that's probably going to be the first pick in the draft. I mean, that's awful encouraging to future quarterbacks out there in the world that what Coach Cignetti has done with quarterbacks throughout his coaching career. You know, you got that component, and then you got the component of, you know, still looking to piece together what needs to be done with this, the roster for next year. And, you know, with Alberto leaving, I think that creates a huge issue at the quarterback position in terms of depth, because we don't know some answers like Tyler Cherry, where does he fit in the equation, and will they be able to get that, you know, backup in the portal that maybe has a 2-year window, you know, somebody that can, you know, that they could groom into potentially. But those are the questions that I'm sure Cignetti is well aware of, and he's probably working already diligently and has been working diligently even before the national championship game. But it's going to be a great thing to watch again to see how they piece it together like they did last year. And, you know, after the celebration on Saturday, that will be the focus Monday morning for Coach Sig and this coaching staff.
And we wonder, you know, we talk a lot about the players. If there will be some coaches off of this staff, mm-hmm. that we've seen Derek Owings, the strength and conditioning coach that had been with Cignetti for 6 seasons, now heading off to Tennessee in the SEC, which USC made a run at him last year. And that is going to be something that happened every year, it seemed like. I wonder why wasn't Indiana able to keep him? You know, there's a lot of reasons. Maybe he's got family in Tennessee. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he had a previous relationship with Heupel. I can't remember where. I can't remember where it was, but there was a connection to him that probably was a big factor in that equation. But that one is a tough one. I mean, as you know, and I mean, most people know, is the strength and conditioning staff and the guy that runs it, they have actually more contact with the players than the coaches do. And that's why it's such an important hire for any head coach, because that guy really is the one that has the day-to-day contact with them. And Owings did a phenomenal job with this group for the last 2 years in that department alone. And the kids rave about him. So that's going to be a blow. Now, I'm sure Sig will have a really good replacement at some point in time to bring on that maybe even, you know, better. But you're right. You know, you don't know what else could happen with guys moving on if opportunity exists because of their success.
And so what do they do now in between point A and point B? And it's the off season, so it couldn't come at a better time, obviously. Right. And you just continue what you were doing, I assume.
Yeah. And you know, you still have that one, this last quote unquote signing date in February that they'll, you know, make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and whether or not there's somebody that pops up in that time period there to potentially sign. And I would imagine after that is completed, Sig is going to probably do what he has done the last couple of years, is he gives the entire department, football staff, about a week off there after the signing date to go and, you know, kind of refresh and recharge their batteries. A lot of guys will go on vacation with their families, and then when they come back, they'll hit the ground running pretty hard for spring practice, because – you go this late, you know, spring practice is going to be a lot faster in terms of its arrival this year than any other year, because they've went so far in the playoffs, and you know, March will be right around the corner. So they'll be full speed ahead with that once they get themselves back after that last signing date period. And you're getting working with this, the 26 team, with winter workouts and those type of things.
Having Josh Hoover too is also another magnet for Kurt Cignetti. I mean, he's like, you know, the North Star for receivers and just anybody really looking to come in, because you already know that you have a solid quarterback, a solid, experienced, successful quarterback.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, he's, you know, thrown for almost 10,000 yards in his 3 years there in TCU. His mobility is really good. He can really spin the ball, you know, very similar to what we've seen in the last 2 years with the quarterbacks at Indiana. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they are from an offensive standpoint as they evolve with this, you know, with Hoover as the quarterback. Because I think we saw how the offense changed some between what Curtis Rourke was able to do to what Fernando was able to do, now that, you know, there wasn't a lot of change in the offense, but there was some unique aspects to it that lended to the abilities of what Fernando could do. And the same thing will be with Josh Hoover. They'll take what he does the best and incorporate it and get him comfortable within the system. And like Cignetti says, for about a week, he'll struggle because it's a brand new system. And then by the second and third week of spring practice, they'll see the improvement because they'll have a firm grasp of what they're doing.
I'll give you a couple minutes to compute it, but think about the similarities and differences between TCU and what Sig's offenses look like so far. Coach Griff with us. We've got lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you as always. We're back with it and more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday. Thank you for being with us. Glad to be with you. Ready for this weekend, man. I hope you are. Coach is up in Fort Wayne. What are you expecting up there?
Well, it's changed pretty significantly from, you know, 1 to 3 inches now. I think they're expecting anywhere from 5 to 8 up in this neck of the woods. But I don't think that's going to come until late Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, because it's here. It's moved later Saturday, late Saturday into Sunday already. So good news for those coming out to the national championship celebration. And looking forward to it, although it's going to be cold. But I talked earlier, the amazing thing is you're going to see a turnout in mid-January at Memorial Stadium bigger than many games that happened, not just before Cignetti, but those first three games of his first 2 years, to be honest with you. Even the beginning of the season, if you think back, the beginning of the season – those non-con games, it's all right. They were all right, but it didn't take long.
Right.
Now next season, Cignetti will not be happy if that's the case. And why should it be? They open up with Taven Jackson in North Texas. So, people can poo-poo that all they want, but let me tell you, North Texas was just outside. I know they had Metzemaker, but just outside of potentially becoming a CFP, CFP team.
Yep, no question. And, you know, the storylines only get interesting, like you said there, with that potential of that happening with Taven Jackson. And I think they're going to have a record year for season in season ticket sales because of, you know, what Cignetti has done. I think that's only going to increase those quite significantly. And I just think now that you're going to see more games that are going to be more filled to the top at Memorial Stadium than we have had in those early games of the year. And, you know, that's the neat thing of success, you know. That's winning, like you said before, cures all, and, you know, in that respect. And he's done it in droves and put a national championship next to his name in 2 years. And I just think everything from ticket sales and attendance wise will be a moot point come the 2026 season.
Absolutely. And I wonder, that brings back, or, you know, I was talking earlier about the CFP staying the same, the SEC, the Big Ten, they're going back and forth. The SEC, I forgot, going to 9 games finally next year, mm-hmm. but also with the P4 requirement, Big Ten yet to do that. So while they're flexing and trying to maintain some power here with the CFP deal, they're still sitting at 9 games without the P4 requirement. And I'm waiting and wondering, when is that going to change?
Yeah, it was interesting because I saw an interview yesterday with the LSU's new AD already questioning whether or not the SEC needs to schedule a P4. Since they're going to 9 games, because probably for the very reason what you just stated there, that the Big Ten really hasn't committed to that model, other, you know, scheduling wise.
Let me tell you when that changes. As soon as a couple of their prime teams loses, though, they like Ohio State beating Texas, and right. that won't take very long. They're like, oh no, we have to maintain the appearance of the SEC being the SEC, although it's not the SEC. Yeah. So,
it'll be interesting for Indiana, because I think Notre Dame in Indiana comes to fruition in terms of schedule in 2027. So it'll be
2030, I think.
Is it 30? Okay. Well, it's coming
29, but I think it's 30.
Coming sooner rather than later, I guess you could say. And that will be an interesting dynamic.
Come as soon as next season, though, in the offseason.
No, right. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they're staying at 12. I do think they need to find their ground and footing there, especially with the playoff committee and kind of reestablishing some things, hopefully. I think the ACC's got to relook at if they're going to continue to have the conference championships. I really think the CFP needs to have a firm statement on what that will or not do to teams that do play in a conference championship. And, you know, in that respect, because there's too much, I don't know what the word is, but there's too much of the, it has no effect on one conference, but in this conference it does. And therefore, you know, it's not the same across the board. There's too much, you know, unevenness, I guess you could say, in the selection aspect when it comes to the college playoffs and how it affects a team in the college, in their, you know, Big Ten or SEC championship type of games. But yeah, I think it's a good thing. I know that, you know, the 24 thing that it seems that Petitti wanted, Stanky from the SEC, they've got presidents there that will not go to the 24 team deal, and that was one of the big reasons why
nobody wants that, and I don't think anybody wants that. I don't know that the Big Ten actually wants it,
right?
If it's something that they're standing on so far away, so they can leave room to negotiate backwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all negotiating things and things of that nature, but I think if they get to 16, that should probably be enough. But, you know, and I know, outside of adding CFP games, the biggest thing they have to find and try to orchestrate is the calendar, and really get a hold on the calendar and how the portal windows should work and things of that nature. Because I just don't think it's a good way with what they've done and how they've had it now with the portal and how it impacts decisions in the middle of the college football playoffs for those teams. I mean,
well, there's that, and they've got to get rid of this useless 25-day period of wandering in no man's land.
Yeah.
40 days in the desert, I mean, is almost, man. It's like, what are we doing here? They need to get this thing going. I mean, why stop screwing around? Get this to where it needs to be and get it done, man. Yeah. You got too many people, too many hands, and now you've got the conference championships. That's a big deal for the SEC. Not that it's not a big deal to the Big Ten, but I think the Big Ten is willing to give it up for play-in games, which is part of what the TD's deal is, which, you know, I don't have a necessarily a problem with that per se, but we don't need more teams. It's not, we don't need more teams. That's the thing. What we need are a couple of less teams as far as G5. I'm sorry, but guaranteeing a G5 team a spot is it's pointless. And that needs to go. It should be based on rankings, number one, but they've got to get to the fact where they people get over. And I think Indiana has helped them do that. This stupid SEC moronic fixation and even Feinbaum's, you know, acknowledgement, although it's useless when you're the last person on planet Earth to finally acknowledge the obvious, who cares? But, you know, you're not it. And your belief that these teams are good because you think that they're good because they used to be good back in the day when they could, it's over. Yeah. It's gone. That's a facade. It does not, it no longer exists. And they're just, until they think that they've got themselves convinced of that until they get the opportunity to think that, oh, well, maybe it's back again, and they'll jump right in it. But, yeah, who cares? All right. All you got to do is keep winning. Just keep doing what the Big Ten does. And right now, they've got three out of the top four teams that thought to be at the – well, that doesn't mean squat, as we saw last year, Penn State and Texas and Clemson were three out of the top four teams. And how did that work out? But right now, Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana already thought to be at the top of the – not alone, but along with Georgia, just because it's Georgia. But, you know, because you're not going to expect a big fall off for some, you know, just because. Right. But you know what? Let them play the damn games. All of them. Stop making Heisman Trophy favorites. That drives me absolutely nuts to see, well, Arch Manning is the prohibitive betting favorite, blah, 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 blah. There should be none. Zero. What has he done? What has he done next season? He hadn't even lined up. He hadn't taken a snap, thrown a pass, given a handoff, done nothing. Let him play. Mm-hmm. It's just too hard. And then, go ahead.
Yeah, as far as the G5s and things of that nature, I think, and I've heard this talked about before, the P4 is what the P4 is, and allow or figure out a way to have a G5 kind of a national championship type of thing, and use that in that arena where you keep it the G5 and the P4s the P4s in terms of the college football playoffs and such, and figure out a way in the P4s and even in the G5s of how you uniquely position the bowl aspect of things and on-campus games, because the on-campus games, I think, are much better.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Big thanks to each and every one of you, man. Thanks to the coach. Thanks, Alec Lasley, and to Zach Osterman as well for joining us here on the program today. We're back on Monday. I hope you get out and enjoy the celebration. Stay tuned for Glass. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the...
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.